From Exodus chapter 12, verses 1 to 13. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, "This month shall mark for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Tell the whole congregation of Israel that on the 10th of this month they are to take a lamb for each family, a lamb for each household. If a household is too small for a whole lamb, it shall join its closest neighbor in obtaining one. The lamb shall be divided in proportion to the number of people who eat of it. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a year old male. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. You shall keep it until the 14th day of this month. Then the whole assembled congregation of Israel shall slaughter it at twilight. They shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel of the houses in which they eat it. They shall eat the lamb that same night. They shall eat it, roasted over the fire with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, but roasted over the fire with its head, legs, and inner organs. You shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. This is how you shall eat it, your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. And you shall eat it hurriedly. It is the Passover of the Lord. For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike down every firstborn in the land of Egypt, both human beings and animals. On all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you live. When I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague shall destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt." The word of the Lord. From John chapter 13, verses 1 to 11. Now before the festival of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The devil had already put into the heart of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray him. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robe, and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel that was tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "You do not know what I am doing, but later you will understand." Peter said to him, "You will never wash my feet." And Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "One who has bathed does not need to wash except for the feet, but is entirely clean. And you are clean, though not all of you." For he knew who was to betray him. For this reason he said, "Not all of you are clean." The word of the Lord.
I was reading an article a couple days ago in the Atlantic, and a writer was describing all the meanness that's going on in the world, and he had a theory as to why it is that people are being so mean to each other these days. And it certainly is true. We see an acceleration of verbal attacks, and sometimes those verbal attacks even spill over into physical attacks. It's white against black. It's Christian against Muslim. It's men against women. It's the rich against the poor. It's the Republicans against the Democrats, the liberals against the conservatives. I mean, all over the place. The world has gotten really mean. Now, I'm a student of history, and politics has always been mean. But I don't think we've ever seen this kind of meanness in the public before. Neighbors and people and families going at each other. It's like we've all turned into politicians. And so this writer had a theory about why it was that there's so much meanness in the world and why people are so at each other. And his theory was this. He said, people aren't going to church enough. Now, this is a secular magazine. But this was the theory of this writer, because here's what he said. When people go to church, they hear stories and teachings about love. And when people don't go to church so much, they don't hear those stories. They hear stories about how bad the other guy is, or what the other side is doing wrong, or they hear all sorts of of things that are used to support why it is we don't like somebody who may be different from us. And I think there is a great deal of truth to this particular theory. And he went on to say, the Democrats, by and large, go to church less than Republicans do, but Republican attendance at church is dropping off precipitously. And it was interesting because when Republicans were interviewed about how we're going to handle problems in the world, the Republicans weren't all in agreement about how we're going to handle problems. And some Republicans said, you know, we need to try to find ways to work with each other. And other Republicans were saying, you know, no, we need to find the enemy and smash them. And when Republicans were interviewed, by and large, those Republicans who thought we ought to do the smashing were people that don't go to church anymore. Even though they continue to call themselves Christian, and they call themselves evangelical even, large numbers don't go to church anymore. And they don't hear the story. The Democrats were the same way. Among Democrats who go to church, the solutions had to do much more among those Democrats with how it is we can work together, how it is we can understand each other, how it is we can create community. But among Democrats who don't go to church, the solutions tended to be more, we've got to find who the enemy is and we've got to crush them. We've got to defeat them. People are just not hearing the stories of love that we tell when we come to church and open our holy book and tell our stories. Now tonight, in fact, all through Holy Week, all we're doing is hearing stories about God's love. We started on this past Sunday, on Palm Passion Sunday, and we heard story after story of the love of Jesus and the love of God making changes in our world through Jesus. Tonight, we're hearing three stories. Jordan has already read two of them for us. The story of God's great love for those Hebrew slaves that were caught under the clutches of the Pharaoh in ancient Egypt. And out of that love of God, how God delivered those slaves and gave them a chance for a new life, hoping they would love one another. The second story that Jordan read for us already tonight is the story about how Jesus took a towel and he knelt down in front of his disciples. Now, that's not how it's supposed to work. The head dog is supposed to, all the other dogs are supposed to bring stuff to him and do things for him. But here's Jesus, and he gives this remarkable story about the head dog taking a towel and kneeling down before his followers, people who were supposed to be subordinate to him, and he's washing their feet. A story of remarkable love. And the next story that Jordan's going to read for us is going to be the story about how Jesus, even though he was going to be betrayed and abandoned by that group of disciples that had the Last Supper with him, they're about to rip him off big time. But nevertheless, Jesus knew it was going to happen. And nevertheless, he took bread and he broke the bread, and that was in Jesus' mind about his body that was about to be broken. And he said, this breaking of this bread, it's my body broken for you. And he took the cup with the wine, and immediately, of course, the wine can look like blood. And he thought about the blood that is going to be there on the cross. And he thought about the blood of the ancient Hebrews, how they took the blood of a lamb and painted their doorpost with it. And that blood was a sign to God that in this home, These are people that are my people. These are people that I'm going to deliver out of their slavery. And when he took the cup, he said, he thought about his own suffering and he thought about the blood of the cross. And he said, whenever you drink the wine from now on, remember this love that you're going to see in the next 24 hours. We're reading stories about love. Tomorrow, we're going to gather at the Christian church. And we're going to hear stories about the love that we can see with Jesus when he's on the cross, a love that's so powerful that he's even going to say, Father, he's going to look at the people that are executing him, and he's going to say, Father, forgive them, because they don't know what they're doing. Forgive them. And then Saturday night, when we come here, we're going to talk about several stories of the love of God, the love of God in creation. We all like creation. We can really feel God, can't we, when we get out there and see all the stuff God's made. And we're going to talk about the love that appears in that story of Noah when the rainbow is in the sky afterward. And we're going to talk about the love of God to Abraham and the promises that he makes for Abraham and the whole life that he opens up for Abraham out of his love. And we're going to talk about the love of God when he helps the people through the Great Sea, when the Pharaoh is chasing them and delivers them and gives them new freedom. And we're going to talk about the love of God in a valley of dry bones and how the love of God can take what's dry and weary and come apart and bring it to new life. Story after story after story of love. Don't you wish everybody could hear our stories? When I was in high school, the choir would sing Hal David and Burt Bacharach song, "What the World Needs Now is Love." And so, you know, it went like this: "What the world needs now is love, sweet love." And then it goes on to say, "We don't need another mountain. We don't need another hillside. We don't need any more oceans or any more rivers or meadows or wheat fields or cornfields or sunbeams or moonbeams." You know, that sounds like a song straight out of the 60s and 70s. And we just need love, sweet love. The song never goes on to explain any much other than love, other than sweet love. And so I think a lot of us, you know, if we don't read these Bible stories about the love of God, we come away maybe thinking that love is something that's just kind of sweet, easy, effortless, smooth. And one of these things that sort of just comes to us magically, and then we live happily ever after. I guess, you know, maybe we could use a little more of that love, sweet love. After this song was written, it was maybe 20, 30 years after the song was written, people started to tell us about not sweet love, they started to tell us about tough love. And I thought, I wonder what the tune would sound like. What the world needs now is love, tough love. And, you know, how you might need to rewrite the melody for that and what the other lyrics would have sounded like. And so we learned about tough love, you know, and we went through a period where we thought, you know, sometimes love means we have to be tough on our children. We have to be tough on other people, that we're doing them a disservice if we're too much of an enabler. And so we learned about that. Okay, love sometimes means being tough on others. When we stop and think about the stories that we've been telling, we started Sunday, we're telling them tonight, we're telling more tomorrow, we're going to tell more on Saturday night. The thing that runs through all of these stories is not sweet love, like some of our romantic stories or our nostalgic stories would cause us to think about. And it's not tough love where we come down hard on somebody else, but it's love where we actually are tough on ourselves. The story of God's love to deliver the slaves from their Pharaoh in Egypt, that involved a struggle, it involved a battle, it involved taking on the powerful, it involved taking responsibility for a whole group of people who didn't know how to be free. Sometimes I look at the story of how God helped those slaves. I don't think the Pharaoh was the hard part for God. I think it was the slaves and trying to get them to have a free person mentality that God, it took God longer to take care of that than it did to take care of the Pharaoh. Taking on powers, engaging the struggle, it's kind of tough on us when we love enough that we're willing to have a confrontation, when we love somebody enough that we're willing to tell them things that nobody else, hard things, nobody else cares enough about them to tell. It's difficult when it comes time to, we see people in our community or our society that are suffering, and we realize that the love of God is the kind of love that brings changes. It doesn't just sort of bring sort of an ointment to help us through and pity people. The love of God is a disruptive love. Look at that love that occurs in the story of the Passover. I wonder whenever I come to the judgment and I have to face God, I wonder if I will be able to say to God that I loved people enough that I was willing to struggle and take some losses and make some sacrifices and take some hits for that. I think it'd be a pity to show up for judgment day and we have no bruises and no scars to show because we didn't love enough to engage a struggle. It's a story about love. That's the story about God's love in the Passover. Or the story about Jesus washing the disciples' feet, a story of humility, a story to, instead of trying to gain power for himself, he's giving power away. He's raising up other people. He's doing the dirty work, and he's doing it for people. He's washing their feet. And is that the kind of, that's a love that's kind of tough on us. It's tough on our self-esteem. It's tough on the way we want to present ourselves, fight, make our way through the world, make sure people don't put us down and mistreat us. And that's the kind of story that we tell. The story of Jesus who kneels and washes people's feet. If more people were going to church hearing that story, I think we'd be able to confine all this nonsense to Washington and Springfield, and we wouldn't have it in our own homes, in our own town, and in our own relationships. We'd be able to put the nonsense back where it always was, and have, instead of having it spread out all over the place. The story about Jesus who takes the bread and he takes the cup, and he's about to suffer pain because it's time to change the world. He suffered pain in order to stop the cycle of abuse and violence that was going on in his day. And it was time, instead of returning an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, instead of getting people back, Jesus took the pain upon himself and he changed the story. What an enormous story of love that is. As soon as somebody, you know, normally as soon as somebody says something or does something to us we don't like or that offends us, we want to go right and get them right back. But that's not the story that we hear in church. It's not the story of Jesus at the table with his followers. I'm glad I'm here tonight in this room where the stories are told that I need to hear. I think we all need to hear. So as we continue to take these stories into our hearts and minds, it is my prayer that they will bless us. And there might be a new peace begin in our world, and it might begin with those people who have heard the stories.